Does any ethno-nationalist state need to exist? Like, does Japan need to remain fully Japanese? Does Germany need to remain fully German? I don't think so.
Well, you're walking right into the discussion that I thought we were going to have. So this is like the most interesting thing to me. Right. First question. You said Japan, Germany. I know when you spoke to Destiny, you said something about fear of like black crime in the United States or whatever, or even South Africa. That's probably the better example.
The arguments for like keeping racial quotas and
when you say racial quotas, what do you mean?
For immigration,
Israel must have like this many Jews. We can't let this many Arabs in. If we got too many Arabs in, they'll overwhelm the vote, sort of thing.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm aware that there are millions of Arabs in Israel, by the way.
Yeah. Like a fifth of the population. Yeah. But yeah, again, left, right,
actually closer to 2/9 of the population.
They're going to want a Jewish majority, yeah, unless they're like Hadash or some crazy fucks. Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, most states do this, but like, it reminded me, and it was evocative of like white supremacist arguments for if we let
when
too
we
many
say
black
Jewish
people
majority,
in, or if there are too many black people
do
in
we
the
mean
city, like then this will
Jewish via race or Jewish via like culture, like not culture but religion.
It's always ethnicity, race. It's always that. It's never religion. Okay. Nothing about this has anything to do with the religion. Anybody that brings up religion
none of them care about it.
Yeah,
will happen. And like, even if that was true, if there was like a black crime gene, I don't think that justifies the ethnic cleansing. You'd have to like
is it ethnic cleansing to control your immigration for demographics, to say you can't immigrate to here on big enough and too massive?
I guess it's not cleansing because it's preventing the ethnic shift at all, but it's like
it's like saying that like if Arabs want to immigrate to Israel, we're probably gonna have like low numbers to keep a Jewish majority. That's like the gist, right?
Sure, but I would view that as the same justification for, hey, there are too many Arabs in the country, let's export a bunch of them, right? Like, it's the same mentality. Does that make sense?
No. I think controlling immigration
is let me say it one more time.
He said.
Just to make sure we're
on the same page. He said,
going to prevent a certain quantity of this ethnicity or nationality from coming in is the exact same, even though it's not the same consequence, it's the same prescription as, oh, they're already here, let's get that same number, that same ratio in this country. So either we're stopping them from coming in or we're kicking them out. Either way, this seems to be, I mean, obviously there are nuances of, oh, they're already here, but this is the same sentiment. We need to protect this ratio. We need to protect this majority. No?
Goofy noise.
Okay, I see what you're saying in terms of like their mindset, but I would rather get turned down entry to a country than kicked out of where I live.
Yeah. That's like why I said, if it's already here and this is your home, obviously you're going to have a distinction.
Okay,
there,
Okay.
It's the same
sentiment. You're making me ask so many questions. Okay, so one.
Okay, fire away.
You mentioned America or like a fear of like black racism or like Japan or apartheid South Africa is a good example, right? Like the fear of giving them voting rights because black people became the majority with voting rights, right? My question is, do you think anti-Semitism and anti-white racism are equally valid concerns?
There you go. No.
I think the people who make the arguments view them the same, but
doesn't
I think
matter.
Anti-Semitism is a much, obviously much more realistic one. I mean, like, you know, there are people who say white genocide, that would be like the utmost, like you are conflating a slight decline in your demographics due to natural population shifts to this country came in and tried to wipe out the Jewish population versus like...
Be careful not to get caught up in disagreeing with certain things because you think it leads to another thing.
So what do you mean in this instance?
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Sometimes there can be things that are justified. The reason why we say those things are bad, though, can rest on the underlying fact of the matter. When we say that January 6th was bad because it was bad to commit to an insurrection, it's not really what we mean, even though that's what we're saying, because we're taking for granted the underlying fact of the matter. First of all, the country was founded on insurrection, right, and rebellion against, so it's kind of weird to have that as a rule. If it was the case that Democrats and states and the Democratic Party had, like, conspired to steal the election and rig the ballot box to all these other things, you could argue that, or not even you could argue, like, maybe an insurrection is justified in that case, right? The underlying fact of the matter does matter here.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So this idea of like, it would be bad to have a white ethno state, so then why is it okay to have the Jewish ethno state? Well, the underlying fact of the matter of, are Jews threatened in the world? Yeah. Are white people? Not really. But if white people were, I don't know, maybe you could make that argument.
Yeah.
If we had a country of 1 million white people and we were surrounded by 100 million purple people or whatever, and they all wanted to immigrate, especially if they wanted to kill you, you know, well, the fact of the matter there is you probably should protect your ethnic population in that case, because it is under threat, you know?
Same thing. Like anti-white racism is not even close historically to racism. Yeah.
So my next question is, Israelis don't want to be a minority in the Middle East. Logically, any country that does become a majority there would be Arabs because that's their neighbors. Mm-hmm. Can you name a single Arab or Muslim country in the last 100 years that has protected their Jewish minority adequately?
Oh my God.
So if Israel ceases to be this bad thing, you say an ethno-nationalist state, preserving a demographic, if they cease to be that, how are you betting on, what are your odds on the Israeli Jews and their futures?
Okay, well, this kind of goes into like the very beginning of what I was saying, which is like, it is entirely plausible to me that if there was a significant Muslim voting bloc in this place that had anti-Jewish or anti-Israel sentiments, that this could lead to apartheid, it could lead to persecution, it could lead to ethnic cleansing of Jewish and Israeli people, and that would not be good. And that's not to say that, like, oh, this is the natural consequence of what is going to happen, and you need to let it happen because what you're doing is bad right now. It's just, is that the ultimate and only outcome, and does that necessarily justify every behavior taken to prevent that?
No, we're not talking about justifying every behavior. I'm talking about the simple principle, absent the other behavior. We're talking about the simple principle of Israel being allowed to exist as a Jewish state. Mm-hmm. They don't need to control the West Bank, they don't need to control Gaza. We're just talking about them existing as a Jewish state, like in this world. So that's basically them saying that we're going to control immigration. Yeah, it sounds like you think they don't have a right to want that.
Ooh.
The sentiment is justified. where it's like a valid sentiment. Fear to see, hey, I've seen that when similar populations get a majority in all these other countries, it seems to like result in our prosecution, death, whatever. Therefore, my fear is justified. But again, then but you have to then attach what are the prescriptions to that. And if the prescriptions are ethnic like superiority things, like, I don't know like to what degree I'm...
No, wait. When you say ethnic superiority things, I'm just talking about one thing, which is they control immigration to the point that it keeps their majority. That's it. Yeah, I'm not saying it justifies any of the poor treatment of minorities or whatever. Just they stay a Jewish majority, which means that if however many, I don't even know how many Arabs are trying to immigrate to Israel, but if a substantial number are, then they...
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, what is the difference fundamentally between that and the people who say Muslims who immigrate to America are going to vote Democrat, elect Muslim Democrats, and fundamentally change the country from what we perceive as a Christian white nation into a DEI Muslim nation?
The fact of the matter does.
Much more misplaced, but like...
If it was the case that Muslims were going to come and like create a new Sharia law country or whatever the fuck else, and I wouldn't want them here. Fuck Jesus. But that's not my understanding. I don't think that's happening.
It's an argument different. Like, it is going to change the country, whether or not they think it's bad or not. And it is going to...
Because the anti-whiteness or the anti-Americanism of the United States or the anti-Muslims who come to the UK does not concern me in the way that anti-Semitism should concern Israelis. I live in a Muslim community. I'm not walking up and down the streets worrying about whether or not one of them supports a terrorist organization that wants to kill me, right? If any Arab population becomes the majority in Israel, it would be Palestinians because of what they advocate for with the refugee problem, with right of return.
Okay, wait. Basically, tell me if I'm framing this wrong. Palestinians necessarily are going to have such a bad anti-Jewish sentiment that it will cause Jews to be in danger. This is just like
If every other Arab and Muslim country did it in the last 100 years, why would Palestinians not? Palestinians are the group that have the most excuse to be anti-Semitic, right? Literally, they actually have a good reason to hate Jews, let alone the countries that didn't have a good reason to. So yeah, I think if in this day and age, like in this foreseeable future, like in the world we live in now, I don't think it's in their DNA or whatever the fuck, like that's crazy. But like, if Palestinians became the majority from the river to the sea in one country, yes, they would persecute the shit out of Israeli Jews. Yeah, that would be, yeah. Remember, to this day, Hamas are the most popular party in Palestine. So,
but it's not, first of all, we know that they're
Hamas
not like a
gets is the party.
Right? Like it is, it's not a plurality.
You don't need to be.
Hamas what?
He said Hamas gets is the most popular.
No, Hamas is the most popular single political party in Palestine.
Oh, got it.
You only need 3,000 of them to cross the border into a seventh. You want to integrate them into a country?
Well, that's what's like, obviously, I think the disconnect here is like, if anyone doubts that I understand like how great anti-Israel sentiment is, I understand this. The problem I see is like, this is a more valid version of like the less... valid, you know, anti-immigration, white nationalist talking points, but it's ultimately the same to a degree where it's like, yeah, there are some portion of Muslim immigrants that are like super pro-Sharia, anti-American, but want to reap the benefits of the American state. Like, if it wasn't 100% of them, if it was 80%, if it's
hot take. Now, this is a conversation that literally nobody has because people on the left don't believe this and people on the right are too either pussy or retarded to even think of this. But if you could vet for like an extremist religious belief like that, I think it would be okay. Or if you could screw her, I think it'd be okay to vet those people and not allow them into the country. If somebody wanted to immigrate here under the principle that they could enforce some state adoption of or mandate of like a religion or something like that, or punish people for not being in a religion, I think that would be an okay thing to screen out from people, I would say. Dubious feeding story poll questions in chat. Uh-oh, is he?
40%. If it's 10%, like at what point does it justify ethnic immigration policies? Like,
should the anti-Arab bigotry in Israeli society concern Arabs such that they should keep Jews from immigrating to the region? Well, if they want to vote on it, they can. But like, I'm sorry, 2 million Jews live in Israel and they can leave anytime they want, right? Wait, what did I just say? 2 million?
You said 2 million, but there's 9 million or whatever.
Did I say it? No, I said Jews. Sorry. There's 2 million Arabs. My bad. 2 million Arabs live in Israel. They can leave if they want. I don't think they would want to leave. I think they generally do okay there. The idea that Jews are trying to kill them all or doing something weird, I guess, it depends on how much leftist propaganda you listen to it.
Like, I guess the dichotomy here is like, you have to have one or the other. And I'm not entirely sold on like, that those are the only two options. Either you do this sort of ethnic population control or you die. And that's kind of where I guess my issue comes in. Like, is this really the only two paths forward that perpetually have to?
No, not perpetually. I don't think this is in Palestinian DNA, right? Like, Jews and Arabs can, like, they live together in Israel. The Arabs who live in Israel with Israeli citizenship are Palestinian, right? Yeah. And, you know, they vote for parties like Ram, which are, they come from the same reformist Islam, like, school of thought that Hamas came from, but they preach coexistence, right? Of course, it's not impossible, but we're talking about, whilst this ideology still exists, and whilst you pull every Middle Eastern country on anti-Semitic attitudes and the protocols and the Holocaust and all that shit, you get, like, 70, 80, 90% strong anti-Semitic attitudes. Yeah, it's like you said, like, when we talk about Muslims coming to the UK or America, like what happens? You know, I think we've had one suicide bombing in 10 years with millions of Muslims living in the UK without, they're not all being monitored, and there's not, like, a military fucking breathing down their neck and surveilling their phones and all this shit all 24/7. We get one suicide bombing.
Isn't this essentially the argument slavers use to extend African-American slavery? We have the wolf by the ear, and we can't safely let him go? So what? They're just oppressed forever? Well, slaves, I'm sorry, I'm pretty sure this is true. Slaves were never a majority of the U.S. population, right? Even at the height of slavery? What was, like, the percentage makeup the difference between white people and black people in the U.S. at like at the peak slavery moment. Like, I don't think there was ever a legitimate threat that all black people would rise up and kill all the white people in U.S. society. Like, man, you know what's bullshit? Do you know what the Three-Fifths Compromise is?
Yeah, it made a black person.
I think of all the things that have ever been negotiated, that's like the most cucked, retarded bullshit, fucking cucky bullshit ever. I would kill myself if I was black and I had no rights, but you could get votes for me. That's the most insane fucking shit. That's bullshit, right? Like, hold on. Well, we don't get as many votes. That's not fair. We need representation. For who? For your slaves that don't have any fucking rights? Okay, well, how about at least half? Okay, God damn it. We'll give you 3/5. That's crazy. That's wild.
In 10 years, Israel, right, shares a border in a very small region with, like, with West Bank and Gaza. And even with the Oslo Accords and with, like, some communities getting freed up with areas A, B, and C, or when you had, like, the blockade on Gaza, or when you had the occupation of the settlers coming out, you get Hamas and you get rockets being smuggled in, and you get people crossing the border with paragliders to go and stab people and shit, or you get fucking suicide bombings. Like, yeah, this concern is just not the same. But yeah, it's like you were saying, like, Jews have been told that you will not survive as a minority in any Arab Muslim country in the last 100 years, but you should just take your chances with
Palestine. Like, it's what needs to change before it's not justified to do it the way they're doing it. Like, because you say
if it's not a legitimate threat, that's it.
But right, but like, you're basing this legitimate threat on this you said, like, it's justified for a lot of them to have
the legitimate threat is based on literally all of history in the entire region as it exists today. I mean, what do you want? Like, Jesus.
Say, because a lot of them are oppressed, war crimes are being committed against them, and so you say it's not perpetual, but this keeps happening. Like, let's say you get your ideal two-state solution type thing. Like, you know, is Lebanon, is Syria, is Libya, is Egypt, are they allowed to also be controlled coming into the
country? They are ethno-states.
Country, like, to that extent.
They already kind of are.
Like, yeah, I mean, well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they all kind of do. Every single other state in the region does, so that's kind of awkward, because it's like, well, you know, should they? Well, I guess, yeah, I guess literally every single state in the region, I guess, already does. Sure, yeah.
You say it's not perpetual, that it's not ingrained in their DNA, but then, like, what actually would need to change where you say, okay, now we don't need to do this anymore, right?
Well, they don't need to do it anymore. Is like, that would be a situation where, let's say, instead of Hamas polling as the most popular party in the West Bank or in the refugee camps in Lebanon, whatever else, what if it was Ram, right?
I hate this talking point by Lonerbox. I wish I was, I'm going to be one day the strongest pro-Palestinian debater, okay? You can't say that as long as Hamas is the majority party. This is why I said before, the solution is you run a fucking vote in Palestine and then you make the leaders negotiate. If Hamas wins, then Hamas wins. Fuck it, that's who you have to deal with. You know, if in a government where Ben-Gvir and Smoltrich, who are insane people, I think both these guys even live in fucking outposts, basically settlements. If crazy lunatics like that are allowed to be part of the Israeli government, I don't know if you really have much ground to stand on to say that, like, well, what if Hamas wins the vote? I mean, Netanyahu is a coalition with some of the craziest motherfuckers in all of Israel. The go-to example is always the Ben-Gvir guy literally had a fucking framed picture behind him of a crazy ultra rabid far right Zionist terrorist who went and did a massive shooting in the Cave of the Patriarchs, I think. Brian Goldstein, it sounds like his name. But he had a picture of this guy behind him. It's fucking wild. So I don't know. I don't like this talking point from Lonerbox. What I would say, you can't continue to terrorize or whatever you want to call it, like a group of people, and then say, well, they still prefer Hamas. So what are we going to do? It's like, well, yeah, no shit. Who the fuck else are they going to prefer right now? But I mean, I agree with, like, Lonerbox on 99% of things, but I feel like Zoner, I feel like Lonerbox leans a little bit more. I don't know if it's true or not. I feel like he leans a little bit more pro-Israel than I do, but it might just be that he's giving, like, the pro-Israeli sides. And this is just my inner Zionist alarm, because the only people that bring these arguments up are usually the crazy Zionist people, because nobody in the West knows any of these arguments. But yeah,
Bambari, which we
I think it's just because he's giving those arguments, I feel the urge to push.
West Bank, or in the refugee camps in Lebanon, whatever else. What if it was Ram, right? What if it was the Ram Party, which preaches coexistence? What if tomorrow, rather than River to the Sea, and rather than like Hamas and all these chants and all that, there was a new leader of Palestinians who emerged as someone who actually was like Mandela and was saying, yeah, we're going to avoid attacking civilians. We don't want to harm civilians and our, like, future neighbors. We want peace and equality for two groups who want to share the land.
But where's that movement going to come from if the kind of, like, the circumstances are the way they are, right? Like, yeah. The reason I say
that movement emerged in apartheid South Africa, that movement emerged under slavery in the United States. Like, yeah, if it can emerge in these situations, it can emerge in Palestine. Yeah, there are Palestinians who talk about this as well. The problem is that it's not just Palestine; it's the rest of the Arab world as well that is involved in this kind of, like, again, most of these countries are dictatorships, and the control over the media is very tight, and like, narratives are very limited. So there is still, like, this is, like, you asked me, like, one thing, things need to change on both sides. The thing needs to change on the Palestinian side is this idea that normalizing relations with Israel or with Israelis is, like, a sin. It's, like, the worst thing you can do. Collaborating, befriending, normalizing—it's all bad. Israel is supposed to be a temporary stain on the Arab Muslim world. That's it. But if they need to get over that, that needs to stop. And there are Palestinian leaders who have tried to push for this. They get ostracized. They get fucked by their own people. Like, yeah, like, that happened back in the 40s and 50s. Yeah, there's just not space.
Would Israel taking steps to try to reduce the kind of limitation of Palestinian democratic say in Israel, would that not be a step towards, like, creating something like that to happen? Or do you think that would just be fruitless?
limiting Palestinian, what do you mean by limiting Palestinian?
Like saying, hey, we can let more of you in and have more of a say in democracy here.
They won't again, do that. Just, no, they like, won't do that, right?
The problem you're running into is that, like, think of it as, like, sectarianism, right? Like, sectarianism is, like, when you look at it as an outsider, it looks fucking crazy, right? Like, they're all, it's arbitrary lines that are drawn that keep conflicts alive for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
The fucking settlers in the West Bank, why is that a thing? What are they out there settling?
Okay, the key thing to understand for all of human history is that when you put people on a land, they own it. That's it. That's how it goes. The more people you have, the more ownership you have of the land.
The more claim.
Society has understood this. That's why in the Soviet Union days, and I think even prior to the formation of the Soviet Union, there was that concept of Russification, where you try to ship out a whole bunch of your own citizens to go live in some place. That's why in India, it was such a big deal when they started building homes to the north of India.
Is that why we sent people west in the U.S.?
Well, yeah, that was also to just
the
explore
westward expansion.
Yeah. And every place, the more people you put there, because once you have a whole bunch of people living there, you can have all the international law, whatever bullshit you want, but in today's world, the only way to remove them is to kill them all, or to ethnically cleanse them, is what they call it, for big populations. Okay. So you just can't do it. So for Israel, what happened is, initially when Israel formed in 48, they had a very, very narrow strip of land, and they felt like they were kind of at risk of being conquered. Like a thing that they used to say was like the rib cage of Tel Aviv, to represent like the 11 kilometers from the border of the West Bank, which was the territory that was all conquered by Jordan, how long it would take to get from there to the Mediterranean or whatever, right? That's how
it was
very narrow. So Israel existed in this tiny state of what today we would call Israel minus the Gaza Strip and the West Bank and the Golan Heights in Syria. And what happened was in 67, there was a big war. And as part of this war, Israel fought with Egypt, that owned the Gaza Strip, and Jordan, that owned the West Bank. And they won that war, and it was a big deal, and they were like, oh my God, like, we're fucking shit up, and we're so cool. And Israel's mindset, like, pretty quickly changed from, holy shit, we had our nightmare scenario of getting attacked by every country, nobody's here to help us, and we managed to conquer all, we fucking are ordained by God, we're gonna actually, like, hold on to this West Bank shit for real, for real, for real. So they took over the West Bank. They took over way more than that. The entire Sinai Peninsula, which is a huge chunk of land between Egypt and Israel. They pushed into the Golan Heights in Syria, which is a good strategic position, and almost up to the Litani River with Lebanon, which is north of Israel. So they conquered all this territory. And then as the years went on, Israel basically thought they were tough shit. They were never going to get beaten by anybody. In 73, Egypt launches another war against Israel. And this time Israel gets kind of fucked up for a couple days. They end up winning, but it's like the anime moment where, like, the villain or the protagonist, like, they win a fight, but their, like, cheek is bleeding. And after they win, they're like, oh, I can't believe he actually cut me or whatever. So Israel had that moment, and they were like, oh, shit. If you talk to Israeli Jews, a lot of them, surprisingly, they'll actually, like, circle jerk the fuck out of this war. It's called the Yom Kippur War. And they're like, yeah, we got surprise attacked and we fucking won. But at the time, Israel was like, we could get fucked. Because for, like, the first couple days, they were literally talking about nuking the Middle East because they were like, we're fucked. The Third Temple has fallen. Moshe Dayan, their defense minister, I think, was saying to Golda Meir, I think, which was still prime minister or something. But so after that war, they realized they needed to make peace with their buddies. Sadat was a leader of Egypt. He made peace with Israel, and Israel made peace with him, and they gave back the Sinai Peninsula. Eventually, after the fall of the Soviet Union in 94, they made peace with Jordan. And then, you know, they're kind of looking around. The Middle East is chilling, but they still have all these Palestinians, and they still have this occupied territory of the West Bank. The awkward thing was, is when they made peace with Egypt, Egypt didn't want the Gaza Strip back. And when they made peace with Jordan, Jordan didn't want the West Bank back.
Okay, so why didn't they want those places?
It's complicated, but Egypt didn't want the Gaza Strip back because they just didn't want to deal with taking in the population that was there, and because they didn't want to undermine future Palestinian people's right or the current Palestinian people's right to have land. All of the Arab states kind of have this collective agreement where they're like, listen up, guys, we got your back. Kind of, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So, for instance, like in every Arab country, you're not even allowed to give citizenship to a Palestinian. That's why so many of them live as refugees in some of these bordering Arab states. They're not actually legally allowed to give them citizenship because they always want to keep...
But they were owned by Egypt in the past, correct?
Yes.
So when did Egypt get ownership of the Gaza Strip, I guess, originally?
In 1947, there was a big civil war that was fought as the World War II ended, everything wound down, and then the mandate that Great Britain had for the whole mandatory area of Palestine. Once that started to expire in 47, a big civil war broke out, and then in 48, Israel fought its war of independence, and as part of that war, all of the surrounding Arab states basically saw it as like a giant land grab, and Jordan was able to conquer all of the West Bank up through the basically splitting Jerusalem in half, I guess you could say, and then Egypt was able to conquer up through the Gaza Strip.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And then Israel.
And then they were like, wait, we don't want these motherfuckers.
No.
So when Israel went and conquered it, they were just like, yeah, we don't want them back.
You can keep it. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
And then for Jordan on the West Bank, it was the same thing when Israel conquered the West Bank. They made peace with Jordan. I don't know if there was ever an offer to give the West Bank back to Jordan. I don't remember those talks, but I don't think Israel would have necessarily given it back. I'm not sure. But after the 90s and then up to 2000, basically, after that 67 war, and then after 73 especially, mm-hmm. Israel's like, we are fucking ordained by God. We've got this. Israel basically started off as this like secular Zionist project. But after 67, people were like, the West Bank, the historic lands of Judea and Samaria, the 12 tribes of Israel, like, oh my God, our people here. A whole bunch of like more, I don't want to say fanatical, but kind of like more religious, more like nationalist, religious driven Jews were like, holy shit, we're going to go settle the land like the Setra and Final Fantasy VII and make love to it and do what God wanted. And they started to slowly,
God wants us here.
Yeah, move into it. And then you had this thing called the Oslo Accords in the 90s where Israel and the Palestinians kind of sort of made a formal agreement to finally start to give them a state, but it didn't really work out because like the Palestinians kept terrorist attacking the Israelis. The Israelis kind of kept, the Israelis would do a thing where like an Israeli will tell you, we didn't expand the settlements at all during Oslo, which is true. They didn't start new settlements, but they kept expanding the borders of like their current settlements. Mm-hmm. So I think in, it was in 2000, everything basically blew up because the Palestinians were like, we're not getting peace. This is fucked. And the Israelis were like, oh, whatever, fuck you. There was this whole thing that exploded called the Second Intifada, where it was basically Palestinians doing a bunch of terrorist attacks all over Israel. Shit was fucked for 4 or 5 years. Arafat never called off any violence because he thought it was based in epic. And then all the Israelis were like, well, this is fucked. We're never going to be able to make peace. And the leader at the time, Sharon, said that the West Bank and the Gaza Strip was going to be the death of Israel because they can't hold on to either territory because it's basically, it's like de facto kind of an apartheid. They're occupying a territory that they're never going to give the people equal rights in, but they also don't want to like give the territory up. So Sharon wanted to pull every single Jew out of the Gaza Strip and every single Jew out of the West Bank. But everybody in Israel was like super ass pained at this. He only managed to get them all out of the Gaza Strip. And there's like videos where you can see Israelis are like crying and screaming as they're ripped from their homes by the IDF because Sharon realized like it's untenable. They can't do this, but he didn't have he wasn't able to remove them all out of the West Bank. At that time, they had tried to make peace there. I want to say, don't quote me on this, but I think it was like, was it 200,000? I think maybe 200,000 Jews, if that, lived in the West Bank. But now that number is up to, Jesus, how many are in the West Bank? Is it like 2 million? Is it a million? It might be 800,000, 700,000, but it's a lot. There are way, way, way more there. And the issue is that like Israel is just, the more that are there, the harder it is for there to be any kind of like negotiated like territory, because now it's like, well, are we really going to move all these Jews out? And they know that, and that's why they keep moving more and more and more and more people there to kind of shore up their territorial strength, basically. Yeah,
got it. So then why do the Jews keep fucking with the Palestinians? Is it just because of the October 7th attack? They were like, all right, well, game back on. We're going to go fuck with you.
What you're basically doing is like you have like tank units, but they never actually attack, but you can draw aggro for them. So the goal is what you do is you take a goat or you take some shit down to some valley, and then you hope that like some Palestinian tries to attack it or move it off your area. And then when he does, then you come in and you fight with him. And then as soon as the Palestinian like tries to attack you, you call the IDF, or the IDF comes in and like, oh, well, we're going to attack by Palestinians. The IDF will come in, they'll clear out the Palestinians. Usually they tell the Israelis to fuck off. But if you're an Israeli and you manage to like build a base, if you get like a box or some fucking shitty trailer set up, as long as you can get, it's a microcosm of really all of Israel, of all of the world, is what outposters try to do is they just try to go and they try to start to build like shitty homes and shitty houses and areas out into these like Palestinian areas. And as long as they can get enough there, eventually it just becomes like a de facto settlement, and then it just grows out from there, and now they have like a new little city. Yeah.
But why would, okay, so I understand why they're going to the West Bank. It's because they're a little bit more fanatic, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So are they just going out there and living off the fucking land and like starting a farm and like having like small families out there and shit? And then,
I mean, some of like, them will, but I mean, you can travel between like getting from the West Bank into Israel is pretty easy if you're Jewish, because there are separate checkpoints for you. There's even privately run ones. We could buy your own like ID system to go in and out. So you can always go into Israel proper if you need to buy shit. But I mean, like the communities can be fairly self-sufficient. Like these are all very wealthy people. I'm sure some of these settlements, they have like their own grocery stores and shit inside of the settlements. You don't technically have to leave, I think. Yeah.
Okay. All right. It makes more sense now.
Yeah. But the frustrating part is, from my perspective, is that the status quo definitely favors Israel, but the whole Western community that's like pro-Palestinian is just encouraging the Palestinians to fight. But like as time goes on, the Israelis are just gaining more citizens inside the West Bank. And yeah, I mean, like
they're upping their legitimacy of being there.
Yeah, because you're not going to kick out. Yeah, you're not going to kick out 750,000 Jews. Like even when they were doing their negotiations in the 90s to try to figure out like what the West Bank would look like, a commonly talked about term was land swaps. The goal was they were probably going to land swap most of it so that like 95% of the Jews that were in the West Bank wouldn't have to move. But the reason why was because most of them were near the armistice lines from the 67 war anyway, the 48 war actually, because of, like where the territory was conquered. So they didn't actually live like really deep into the West Bank. But now it's like grown so much, it's like, well, what the fuck are you going to do?
So why not stop the expansion into the West Bank at this point and kind of just call it like, all right, well, the Jews, they've expanded this far. We can't kick them out in the future.
Who would stop the expansion, though? Because the Jews want to expand there. Now you've got a government that fully supports your expansion there.
Wouldn't the want of stopping terrorism against your people be a motivating factor with stopping expansion?
Fuck no. Expanding. You're fighting the good fight. The people that are going out there that are fighting those fights are fucking crazy, but they welcome it. They want to fight. Yeah, that's fighters. The goal. Yeah, they're fighting for, and you're fighting from a very safe base of attack as well, right? Like, you have the whole IDF behind you if things get like super ultra fucked and nobody
if
around the world.
Bad, you call the IDF and then you got the military to come fucking kill them for you.
Yeah, if you need, yeah. Or at the very least, like, extract you from it, so.
They argue that settlements stop terrorism.
I mean, they do by getting rid of all the Palestinians out of there. So, I mean,
well, yeah, if you kill them,
there's
none
left.
I mean,
or just you kick them out.
Terrorism. I mean, triple as. Wow. Oh fuck. Okay. And then Gaza got kind of leveled because there were the Hamas terrorists there that they had to root out or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Hamas was the government of the region, but
yeah,
I mean, they wanted to get rid of all of Hamas there, which is legitimate. But also, it's like, I mean, they're. I mean, Israel is maintaining an untenable. I mean, like, what do you want me to say? What do you think is going to happen? I mean, yeah. I mean, the people in Gaza are fucked. Israel never ever wants that land, but Egypt's never taking it back. But they're not going to form their own country there. I don't even know if that would be possible. There's way too many Palestinians that live there, but they also don't want to connect the territories either. So, like, keeping them separate benefits Israel a lot because you get to have a country of 9 million citizens, 7 million of which are Jewish, and now you've got a fractured 2 million Palestinian state to the west and then a fractured 2 million Palestinian state to the east. And I mean, each of these are negotiating on their own behalf. They're also adversarial to each other. The Palestinian Authority that runs the West Bank fucking hates Hamas and the Gaza Strip, and Hamas hates the Palestinian Authority. These groups have tried to work together in the past and they've like backstabbed and cooed each other. It is completely fucked. So Israel gets to enjoy like having their enemies separated into two separate territories, split almost 50-50 population wise, like disjointed governments. Like the status quo just benefits them a ton. Yeah.
So what is the solution with the Gaza Strip right now?
Depends on what you want to do with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, and who decides that? Israel at this point still?
Israel and the United States, which means Israel, yeah.
Okay. Did Israel send in, like, the IDF, like, ground forces to go and, like, clear out Hamas, or were they just bombing?
I mean, they sent them in. No, they send in ground forces eventually, but they do a lot of bombing, a lot of ground forces, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, well, there is people get yet, mad. Probably at this point, yeah. People get mad, but like Israel does a pretty phenomenal job at limiting civilian casualties as much as it can, given like the circumstances of the battlefield they're playing on. But I mean, like, it's not really like anybody that criticizes the actions in war rather than all the conditions around it, I think kind of loses the plot. But the people that criticize Israel's actions in war, in their mind, Israel's not allowed to do anything. They think that Israel should just cease to exist. So it's kind of a hard point to go over, yeah.
Okay. That was my history lesson for the day.
And it doesn't really help anyone to behave the way that they do in a lot of these ways, like whether it's in Lebanon or Syria. But the other, probably more dangerous thing is to just go to one group and tell them to let their guard down and just hope that the other side stops being sectarian in the same way or doesn't reciprocate or doesn't just like exploit a vulnerability or whatever. If Israel just starts allowing people in the West Bank to immigrate to Israel right now to get citizenship, then like unconditionally, then they're just taking their chances with
someone.
Well,
I'm not saying like just unconditionally let your guard down, but like is that not kind of what you're saying needs to happen from the Palestinian side in order for this to change? Like you guys just need to ignore every historical thing and get over all of your grievances and just say we want peace regardless no conditions, right? Like
I don't think in 1952 or whatever when Israel normalized with Germany, I don't think they ignored or forgot the Holocaust. I don't think they did that. No, you don't ignore your grievances. Sit there and you ask yourselves, what is this strategy and does it work? The current Palestinian strategy and the current mindset of seeing Israel as a temporary entity, that has clearly not worked. They don't need to ignore their grievances. No, they should demand accountability for their grievances. They should demand reparations to some level, I think. They should demand settlers go, but that's the thing. Like, imagine a Palestinian movement tomorrow in the West Bank that ditched Hamas, that ditched Islamic Jihad, and only targeted settlements, that maybe did like a Mandela-style thing. Let's say they blocked settlers' roads like they do to them, or let's say they knocked out their energy supplies or their electricity lines, or let's say that they saw like a new settlement trying to get set up and they went and tore it down. And they fought with soldiers who tried to defend the settlers. Then, and they said, yeah, we're going to be violent because there's a violent occupation, and we will, yeah, we'll stop if you want, but just leave us alone. Get the fuck out of the West Bank. Let us have our country next to yours, and we'll be neighbors. If that was the Palestinian movement, like, tomorrow, like, it will be fucked. Like, the Israeli right would be fucked as well, because everything they say about Palestinians will have been proven wrong. Like, and that's the
would the IDF not just come there, in Rob? And fuck them up?
What do you mean?
For that? It sounded like he was saying, like, if the Palestinians just kind of got together and they just did, like, you know, not like actual fucking terrorism, but like they blocked roads, they stopped power going to the new settlements, etc. I think he said Israel would be fucked, but wouldn't they just call in like the IDF to come fuck them up for that, or no?
Well, no, the issue is that, like, I think it was Abi Iban, the saying is that, like, the Arabs never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity or something. Like, it would fuck up Israel hardcore. Like, Israel always gets just enough leeway from unhinged Arab actions to kind of sort of justify themselves to the world, and definitely to their domestic population. So they got it during the second Intifada from 2000 to 2004 or 2005, and they kind of got it now from October 7th. If the Palestinian people committed to some peaceful thing, they had like a leader who was legitimately committed to it, especially they had a unified Gaza Strip and West Bank, and they were calling on some unified thing, then Israel would have a really hard time to say no to that. Like, when I said before that Israel had made peace with Egypt, Israel, at that point, it was kind of seen as an impossibility that Israel could make peace with any country. The reason why Israel was made to make peace with Egypt is there was a new leader in Egypt. I forget his first name. His last name is Sadat. Anwar Sadat, something. Sadat, and what he basically said was, he told Israel, like, I want to make a formal peace agreement with you. And I think Israel said, fuck off, we're not doing that. The Yom Kippur War happened, which was a big surprise attack from all the
Very
surrounding Arab states.
For them, yep.
Scary for a couple days, mm-hmm. And then that's when the U.S. in 73 finally big dick joined. It was like, we're going to replace literally every single thing you have on day two or three, because we don't want you guys to start nuking everybody. But after that, Sadat, in a massive overture, the invitation might even be given on fucking CNN, I don't remember, but in a massive overture, Sadat, the Egyptian leader, and prior to Sadat, there was a guy called Nasser. Egypt was like seen as kind of the leader of the of like this new pan-Arab world where they were trying to make this giant country, so they wanted to kick the Jews out. Nasser had been replaced by Sadat. Sadat, the new Egyptian leader, flew to Israel and went to the Israeli Knesset, their Congress, and he gave a speech in the Israeli Knesset to bring like the Israelis to the table. And when you have like pressure like that coming from the Arab side, there's just no way that on the Jewish side you can't. Even your domestic population would be like, well, this is fucked.
100%.
But the issue is that like Israel had, or you can argue for Egypt, Egypt had a state and they had something to gain. Israel was able to give them back the entire Sinai Peninsula, which they also wiped their settlements out of as well. They took all the Jewish people out of the Sinai, although I think there was only like 5,000 people. But yeah, Egypt got the Sinai back and then they had peace with each other. It was fine. But it's hard if there's like a strong, like the guy that was always representing all the Palestinian people up to 2002 was a guy called Yasser Arafat, and Arafat was a military leader, and that's all he could have ever been. He just never had the mind to be like a political leader.
He wasn't a politician.
No, yeah. So he was always happy to see the fight as well, and he lived for the fight, basically, I think. Yeah.
So Egypt is still chill to this day with Israel, then?
Correct. Even when, and there's a big thing because a lot of the more Zionist Jews will tell you, like, well, you can never make peace with Arabs. They'll always lie. But there was a huge concern, I think it was in 2011, when the Muslim Brotherhood took over in Egypt, because they're kind of seen as kind of like sort of terroristic elements, Islamists, mm-hmm. I think. They're the new president, I think, of Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood guy, I think literally wrote a letter to the prime minister of Israel. I don't know if it was Netanyahu in 2011, basically saying that, like, we intend to honor our peace agreement with you, which was a little surprising to people. So, yeah, they respected it.
Okay.
But I'm not asking Palestinians to...
The big issue for Palestinian leadership, though, is that, like, it's very, very scary for Palestinian leadership to put a deal on the table saying, these are our terms that we'll agree to. Because no Palestinian leader has ever, in the history of all of Palestinian agreements or whatever, has ever put down solid thing on the table. Well, the thing is, you just don't want to put something down and be seen as, like, backstabbing your people. So the big thing is that, like, there's this concept of, like, the right of return. And the Palestinians, there's like I think 7 6 or 7 million Palestinians that are refugees that are outside of Israel and the Palestinian territories. And what a lot of Palestinians will say in like leadership roles is if we have an agreement, a peace agreement, it has to involve the right of return of every Palestinian refugee. So if that happens and they say they should go back to Israel proper, well, now Jews are a minority. So that's like always one of the huge hanging points. And there's never been a Palestinian leader that has ever said this is the number that we'd be willing to accept. That number is always, always, always open-ended.
Got it. Because they want to do the right of return or whatever.
Correct. Or at least they don't want to take it off the table, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Ignore their grievances or to ignore the pain that's... I'm saying that on their end, there needs to be a leadership and like a movement and a way of thinking about the conflict that actually helps them. Because right now, their current leaders are not doing that.
Okay. I think it's frustrating because I don't think you and I disagree on the fear or like the reason why Israel might have to maintain some sort of ethnic majority. I think the problem is that I don't see how it ever moves forward. Like, it's funny because I'm like, damn, can anything change your mind? The answer is really no. It's exactly what I thought the first time I ever heard of this. It's like, it's just uber fucked and so many extreme measures have to be taken that don't exist now. And I don't know how you manufacture those measures. I mean, I at the very least, first of all, I very much appreciate you taking the time. And I like that at the very least we can come to the prescription of like, hey, people in America today need to be holding our politicians accountable and saying, like, demanding certain conditional aids and actionable things to punish Israel for the worst things they're doing. But yeah, it just becomes this like super frustrating conversation for me because I can look at something bad and people are like, you don't understand why they're doing it. It's like, no, I do. I just don't know if like that's the only option. And if the only option only has to come from like a movement or like some greater project within the oppressed people, like, I don't know. It just seems like this unfair sort of like, well, but that's not gonna happen, therefore. And then everything keeps happening the way it is. I don't know.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like, we, like, as Westerners, it's almost like what maybe you and some activists do as well, is like, ironically, don't fall victim to, like, a Western, to, like, a progressive imperial mindset. That exists as well. I think a lot of Westerners seem to overestimate the amount of power that they have over developments in other countries around the world. Like we can do some things. We can pressure the Israeli government, and we should do, and we should pressure them a lot more than we do. But at the end of the day, like, we can't change the conflict from just ourselves, right? Changes need to happen everywhere. Not just even Israelis and Palestinians. Qatar would need to change what they're talking about, because Al Jazeera is a very important player in the narrative of the Israel-Palestine conflict. Like, Jordan and Egypt would have to be involved in any kind of peace process that involves Palestinians. Lebanon is important. Syria is important. So there are limits to, like, as Westerners, like, we can mitigate harm, or we can push Israelis into a more humanist, into a more liberal position. And that would probably also involve, like, maybe befriending left-wing Israelis, because they're probably, like, the most lonely group in the world right now. Not to mention Palestinian Israelis, you know, them too, right? Like, there are things that people can do, but yeah, it's like, I don't know, like, I just don't have any faith in, like, the current, like, activist movement, because I don't think they're really, whatever they're doing, it's not a movement that sees a problem and wants to fix it. I just don't see that in them. I see, like a social movement. I see, like, for some people it's a fucking fashion trend, like the white guys wearing kafias to this day in, like, Western capital cities for whatever reason. Like, but yeah, I don't know. A lot needs to change everywhere, I guess, but I guess that's politics.
Do you think it's on the West for them to come in and, like, help figure out Israel-Palestine, or do you think Israel-Palestine should just kind of be left on their own to, like, figure it out themselves?
No, it has to be a strong U.S. leader, I think, that for, because historically that's just kind of how it's worked out.
It's always, like, worked since World War II.
Am I making this up for Sadat invites Israel speech? Didn't this happen on U.S. media, or am I making this up? I thought that he gave the invitation on, like, CNN or something. Or I don't even know if CNN was there back in the 70s. I don't know how old this is.
Did his people, like, think he was being a fucking cuck, like, in common day terms?
Some people would argue, yeah. He was assassinated
Jesus.
In 81. Yeah.
But the agreement held strong.
Yeah, it did. However, there was a guy called Rabin. Was Rabin? There was in 95 when he was assassinated also. I think he was the one. Did Rabin do the Oslo Accords? But he was assassinated too. So it's always like,
you do something for it, but then you get killed. Jesus Christ.
Yep. Really bad on the Rabin thing, by the way. Before Rabin was assassinated, a lot of the, I think it was the Likud party back then, they were so mad at Rabin for signing the Oslo Accords that the far right people were doing these demonstrations or protests. Fuck, I'm not going to find it. But Netanyahu was part of these. And I remember in one of these, he was carrying like a black casket for Rabin because he was so mad Jesus. That they signed that. Yeah, and then he gets assassinated, I think, the same year.
So they assassinated this guy because he did a peace deal, or I would assume there's other reasons, but
for Rabin,
one of them.
Rabin, 100%. Sadat, I've heard different things that maybe necessarily it wasn't because of the Camp David Accords or whatever. There was who was this? I think it was Hafez Assad. At one point, I don't remember who was speaking to him. It couldn't have been Arafat. Somebody asked him about, like, signing something with Israel, or are you ever going to have, like, talks with Israel? And I think he made there was a statement or a quote or something. It was like, the second I do this, there'll be like a knife in my back or something, you know? But yeah, mm-hmm. Not good.
It's interesting, even though those people got assassinated, the agreements kept on continuing.
the Egypt peace deal did, the Oslo Accords, people done. See them now as like a failure, because it was the Oslo Accords were supposed to be transitional. Like you had Oslo 1, Oslo 2, and it was supposed to transition the West Bank and the Gaza Strip into like formal Palestinian state, but it never came to fruition. So we're just like trapped in the Oslo Accords, basically.
Do you think we're going to get a deal or anything in the next few years over this?
No.
Or are we just going to sit in a fucking... Okay, we're just going to sit around and...
No, because on the first big ones for Egypt, Carter was seen as being largely responsible for, I believe, facilitating those talks. Jimmy Carter? Yeah, it was seen as a really big push from the U.S. president for that. The closest the Palestinians and Israel have ever been to peace was at the end of Bill Clinton's term, and it was because Bill Clinton was putting in a monumental effort to make peace work as well. So that's why I said before, it probably takes some U.S. leader to come in and facilitate it. But
got it. What was the Clinton thing where Hillary was pissed off at him, and then Hillary was mad at Clinton over, I think, the blowjob shit, and then she was ignoring him for like months or maybe a year or whatever, and then there was like a genocide
going on. She picked up the phone or something and called him. Yeah. Fuck, what was that for?
Serbia?
Was it? I don't remember the timelines on the Monica Lewinsky stuff. Maybe, yeah.
He immediately went in. God, Bill Clinton, he just sounds like the fucking goat. Balanced the budget, handled Israel-Palestine, didn't get any fucking crazy wars, did he?
No, I'm pretty sure most people see the intervention in Serbia as a really great, I think most people see, probably not the lefties or whatever, but I think most people see that as a really good example of like powerful, positive like NATO intervention. Because I think they even got a UN Security Council resolution to go in for that as well. They had a UN resolution. They didn't get a UN Security Council one for this. They got the UN Security Council resolution for Bosnia and Herzegovina in 95, but not for this one. But yeah, I'm pretty sure most people see the majority of Clinton's presidency as being pretty successful. And then, yeah, you had Bush, which was just a fucking disaster. And then you had...
Bush Jr., right?
Yeah. Wait, why didn't Bush Sr. win re-election? He got kicked out after one term. I don't even know why.
I don't know.
And Bush Sr. would have been the Gulf War, right? Was it 91?
He was
91?
Like the China fucking guru.
No, I'm so sorry. Wait, yes?
Bush Sr. He was the 41st president. After him would have been Clinton, right? Yeah, Clinton.
He promised no new taxes and then did taxes. Okay.
Shrimple ass.